You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Now is the chance to use reliable energy to grow your money with the Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. Our new investment product offers competitive returns, no maintenance fees, and flexible online access to your money. Make the reliable investment in reliable energy. The Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. To find out more, go online to reliabilityinvestment.com. That's reliabilityinvestment.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Happy, I guess, to most of our fans, happy we can focus pretty fully on basketball week.
Sure. I mean, we're going to focus on basketball, but...
I think it's less happy for some of us, but
right.
Even with a 10-3 season, I'm not going to pretend like a good chunk of our fans aren't like thrilled to be done with the distraction that was Syracuse football.
I mean, that's fair, but we're not done with the distraction that was Syracuse
football. Oh, we are certainly not done.
That anyone who's listened to this podcast for even a handful of episodes knows that is not the case. Dan and I are actually recording this while Syracuse is facing Clemson. As of this moment, they are up 17-9 at the 11-13 mark. Dan is watching on his phone. I am following on ESPN's game tracker.
Is ESPN's game tracker even up to date? Because it
probably not.
Right now it looks like it is. Yeah, it's usually way behind when stuff's not on ESPN proper
right now.
And I have to watch my phone because ACC Network's still a couple months away.
And I got a feeling we're going to be streaming a lot more than we want to.
Oh, I'd so much rather stream on ACC Network than have to deal with this, figuring out where Raycom Sports is being sent.
Agreed. No, that would be definitely preferred, especially for those of us who have a Fire Stick or any sort of smart TV. The ability to just pull up the ESPN app is a much easier endeavor than it used to be, where you'd have to get a cord running from your computer to your TV or just watch on your computer or your phone or whatever. And yeah, it's a much better deal now.
I don't love the delay, obviously, but like I have my phone pulled up right now on theacc.com and like the picture's okay, but like I'm trying to watch on my cell phone while recording a podcast. It's not an optimal experience. I'd rather just deal with a minute delay on my TV.
Right. Yeah, honestly, the only reason I haven't made the switch, and like I have like streaming tools here, but the only reason I haven't made the switch away from DirecTV is because I can't do the delay for me, because I'm usually like live tweeting the game or whatever. I just feel like it's just enough at about 30 seconds to make me not want it. And I'll pay
it's
extra.
Annoying.
Alas.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the cable cutting in general, but the Syracuse games and the watch ESPN games are a bit annoying. Although for like college football, I'm usually at work, so it's not even an issue. We have cable there, but yeah, the occasions where I have to watch Syracuse at home and they're not on one of the regular ESPN networks isn't great, but it is what it is. And the fact that I'm able to watch this at all, I was surprised. It was like a last second thing. I'm like, oh, let me check the ACC website, because I know they do it sometimes without the blackout, and I guess I should be happy that I'm not just not watching the game at all.
Perfect. Yeah, I the only reason I'm not watching the game, like, streaming is because I didn't want to mess with our bandwidth here.
That's fair. That is a constant battle.
Yeah. So since the basketball game is on, we're going to talk a little football first. That way we can get, like, a half in against Clemson and start to at least make a couple conclusions that don't necessarily seem dated whenever the podcast gets posted, either Thursday or Friday. So for those who aren't paying attention, Syracuse finished number 15 in the AP poll. It's the highest finish since 2001 when they finished 14th. I think it's the 11th time they finished among the top 15 teams in the country in program history. That's all pretty cool, and a lot of people are pretty high on Syracuse for next year, too. The informed kind of commentators around the country seem to think that they're a top 25 team once again. A few different sites left us off, shun the non-believers, as it were. But plenty of folks are fans, ESPN being the biggest one, having us all the way up at number 15. A lot of other folks had us kind of in that 18 to 21 range, which I think is fair. Dan, I don't know if you put together your own full kind of way too early top 25. I did in the comments, but I thought 18 was a pretty fair number just because we don't know what's going to happen with the defensive line. The offensive line is going to take some work, as are the linebackers. And then, you know, we know Tommy DeVito can play, but we don't necessarily know, you know, if he's going to be able to replicate the sort of production that Dungy had, you know, right away, or if it's going to take a few games to get rolling.
Yeah, I think anywhere in the top 25, honestly, is, like, relatively fair. I think it's hard to really argue with any of those spots. I think being outside the top 25 is kind of lazy. But, you know, there are legitimate questions, like, you know, DeVito looked good in a couple spots. He looked pretty bad against Notre Dame, and I guess against Western Michigan, although who cares about that one. Right. So I think if DeVito plays like he did in the Florida State second half and the UNC second half when he came in, like, there's a very good chance he's putting up comparable numbers, better numbers than Dungy, better passing numbers for sure, I would guess. If he is more consistent, which, you know, he's going to be a redshirt sophomore making his first stint as QB1, that's a very distinct possibility. I think it's very easy to look at Syracuse losing seven starters on offense or six starters on offense. Three along the offensive line, I believe. But, like, losing Custis is not great because he gave us such a different look and such a physical presence at receiver. But we return pretty much everyone behind him.
Right.
Have a just loaded situation at running back with Mo Neal, Abdul Adams, Jarvion Howard, and a couple other younger guys stepping in. Defensive backfield is very young, very talented. Defensive line depends on what we see from some of the older guys, whether they take a shot at the NFL or come back. It sounds like Dino said that he expected everyone back that could come back. I think in that back half of the top 25 is pretty fair.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point on the offense. I think losing Custis isn't great, but at the same time, you know, having guys like Tristan Jackson, Ed Hendricks, who was injured this season and didn't get to play at all, will be a redshirt freshman next year. Obviously, you know, Taj Harris came in and really impressed. I think Custis had the size to always be physically imposing and at times used that size. I feel like a lot of times he didn't necessarily use that 6'5 frame to his full benefit. I think in some ways, you know, guys like Steve Ishmael and Ahmed Atawa, who were more in the 6'3", 6'4", range, they probably did a little bit better job of leveraging size advantages down the field. And that's not to take away from what Custis did, but I do think that, you know, there's a chance we don't see much of a drop-off there. I think with the youth right now at receiver, the fact, again, that we're getting Tristan Jackson added in to basically replace Custis, I think we're in a pretty good spot there. And we've covered before how deep that receiver group is. The running backs are going to be, you know, pretty great again. I think the line is going to be the biggest question, and that's really just going to be, you know, dictated by how we shuffle things around. I think Aaron Servais probably ends up a tackle with Sam Heckel kind of jumping into center. Both of them are experienced players. So they'll both, I'd say, without much doubt, start. You probably end up with Evan Adams starting. And that'll be three, you know, guys who have at least like 10 to 12 starts under their belts. So as much as losing the three starters hurts, I think we're uniquely positioned right now to actually replace those guys. And you look underneath, and there's a lot of, you know, redshirt sophomores, redshirt freshmen, guys who can, similar to this line, similar to the line back in 2012, you know, kind of work their way up the depth chart together and become a really, you know, solid group once this current list of starters kind of shuffles out.
Yeah, that's the nice thing. So we do have some depth at the O-line position. Obviously, they played pretty well this year. But, you know, we lose Tota Martin. We lose a few others. But I think we're not, like, just starting completely new at three of those spots. We have guys who have played years past. We have guys who have shuffled in and out. So it's a concern for sure, and it won't be quelled until you see them play. But I think it's less of a dire situation than we've seen ourselves in with some of the previous, like, experienced offensive line moving on.
Oh, completely. But yeah, I think in general, like, the schedule, as we've talked about numerous times, we don't need to rehash, like, is very manageable. You know, you basically have a similar schedule to last year and just slot in Maryland for Notre Dame. Yes, the game's on the road. Yes, Maryland might be pesky, but if you want to take anything from the, you know, college football playoff national championship on Monday, Mike Loxley's play calling is not always great. Obviously, he'll have some help there. With the Terps, but you know, you have to think there's going to be a few growing pains for Maryland early on, and that could be something that Syracuse is able to take advantage of, provided, you know, we're all healthy and things are firing on all cylinders, which in year four of Dino Babers I would expect that they do. So again, not chalking that one up to a surefire win, but I think you can, you know, easily talk yourself into 3-1, and 4-0 is really not much of a stretch, and that non-conference slate. And then kind of go from there. Like, it's not too hard to see how Syracuse finds its way to 7 or 8 wins, you know, as kind of a oddly floor for next year. I mean, I'd say the floor is 6, like, realistically, in case disaster strikes. But I feel like I'd be disappointed if we don't see at least 7.
Yeah, I think, honestly, like, we've always been pretty conservative about tempering expectations with this team. I would be fairly disappointed with that schedule without winning 7 or 8. And I don't think necessarily you look at, like, a 2-2 drop off if we were to win 8 games as, like, a huge step back. I think we were talking about it earlier in the week. Like, we definitely did some work on, like, the coin flip games that we had just been getting hammered on for years. There were other games, like the Florida State game wasn't really a coin flip game. We just beat them right, pretty straight up. But like UNC, we could have easily lost. NC State, we could have lost. So we definitely, like, had our share of lucky moments going in our favor this year for the first time in forever. So winning only 8 games next year, like, hypothetically, obviously we have no idea how it's going to play out. Like, I could see some people getting annoyed by that, but really it's more like we're settling into, like, where we should be if it's we're running a good Syracuse program in the ACC. Like, 8 wins is probably around the median, hopefully. And then you have your years like this year where you have some things go your way. You win 10, you win 11. Like, most years in our spot this year, we would have gone to the Orange Bowl. And in others, like, you know, you might only win 6 or 7. But I do think with the schedule being as favorable as it is, winning fewer than 7 or 8 would be a bit disappointing, although nothing to, like, go crazy about unless we were to go, like, 3-9.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree there. And I think, you know, fans probably need to level set just a little bit, and we have all offseason to do that. But, like, when you think about it, I know I broke this down in the comments the other day. Like, most of the teams in the ACC are going to be about the same or a little bit better. I think the only teams that are going to be, like, worse in any significant way or even in any, like, measurable way, us, and we really don't know how far that is. It might be nothing. I think NC State is a little bit worse without Ryan Finley. I think Duke gets a little bit worse without Daniel Jones. And Wake gets a little bit worse without Greg Dortch, without that, you know, senior-laden offensive line. That's really it. I think those are the 4 teams that, like, you maybe look at for a little regression. Everybody else is probably poised to be the same or better. It helps that 3 of those teams that are declining are on our schedule. But again, we're potentially there too, because, you know, in spite of what we think about DeVito, and what DeVito wasn't always flawless, he probably won't always be flawless when he takes over next year, and that's fine. You know, redshirt sophomore, it's going to take a few growing pains to kind of get into rhythm, and that is what it is. But you look at that, you look at the fact that ACC is not going to be the train wreck that it was largely this year outside of, you know, us and Clemson. Clemson could potentially even be better, which might be disheartening to some teams. I think realistically, like those toss-ups on an annual basis, you know, we usually count toss-ups, Pitt, NC State, Wake, BC. A lot of years that we've been bad, we've gone 0-4 against that group. This year, we went 3-1 against that group. If we can go 3-1 again against that group, we're going to a bowl game. You know, plain and simple. And you know, it gets back to that theory that I harp on all the time of, like, in most years, SU is going to lose 4 and win 4, and everything else is kind of dictated by what happens in the middle. Now, we won more than the top level of that 8-4 this year. But I think that that's not necessarily it's a rarity, and it's not necessarily something that everybody should just automatically get used to. We might just win 10 games again next year, but, you know, just because you do it one or two years in a row with a down conference and a manageable schedule doesn't mean that, like, anything below that is disappointment. I think if SU can establish itself as a consistent 7-8 win team, that's great. And if you want to jump up every few years, every 5 years maybe, and win 10 games, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think you just have, we have to become comfortable with Syracuse being who they are and not freaking out if we have a couple of years where things just don't, like, improve year over year. Like, it's just not, there's not going to be, after a while, we're not going to have, like, a constant upward trend in terms of raw wins. You just hope that the program continues to build in terms of something that, that recruits think of as, like, a top 25-ish program or a competitive program in the ACC. You hope maybe, like, some sort of not conference realignment, but, like, divisional realignment kind of comes about and maybe helps us out a little bit with being stuck in the division with Clemson and we'll eventually not be bad Florida State. I don't know when that will be. I don't know if it'll be under Willie Taggart. I think that whole situation's been a little bit reactive since their season. Considering Taggart's had a lot of success elsewhere, it just usually takes him a little bit. But either way, like, they will, in the next 5 years, Florida State will be probably a tangible power again, no matter how it happens. So, you know, you just have to be realistic about where Syracuse's place in the world is, while hoping that you can, in the long term, start to up that versus just getting stuck where, like, you know, nothing changes, kind of like where we were when we fired Coach P, where, you know, things weren't bad if we, you know, we'd signed for the end of Coach P compared to the G-Rob years or the Schaefer years, but I totally get why he was fired. And it doesn't mean that it was a wrong decision to fire him. It just means that the processes afterwards were not good. I think we are a long way from getting worried about stagnation, though, because I think Babers will be here for hopefully, I mean, at least one more year, hopefully longer, depending on what that contract looks like, and depending on what the rest of the college football world shakes out to be. And we can kind of keep things rolling here. It's a nice time to not have to, like, worry about you know, oh, we have to, like, make this improvement or else some crazy shakeup's going to happen.
Speaking of crazy shakeups, something else that's not going to happen is Dino Babers is not going to go coach Baylor. That's not just because Matt Rhule is not the Jets coach. It's just because it wasn't going to happen to begin with.
Yeah.
We was definitely seeing a little bit of, you know, Pollyanna-ish things going on. And I understand that SU fans have their moments, and I'm part of that too, like, where, you know, you get unnecessarily worked up and you get worried about things that you know, kind of speak to maybe some sort of inferiority complex that's ingrained in our psyche here and there. But, like, in general, I've said this before, you said this before, like, Power 5 coaches don't leave for other Power 5 jobs unless you're one of those big jobs, and, like, Baylor isn't one of those. Baylor still has, like, NCAA issues that they could potentially be dealing with down the road. I mean, Matt Rhule's done a great job down there, turning things around. But at the same time, like, do you really want to have to hit reset at Baylor, given everything that's gone on over there? And, like, I mean, Babers was there for some of it and, you know, isn't linked to anything that any of the things that happened there. But at the same time, like, if you're him, why would you want to go back there and deal with that?
People are overrating, like, the Babers being at Baylor thing, and not in terms of, like, the concerns. Like, I think we all had, like, concerns when the Baylor scandal is rising. It luckily the timeline seems to mostly vindicate him.
Yeah.
But like he wasn't a Baylor alum, or he wasn't a
Texas guy.
He didn't grow up in Waco. He wasn't like his dream job. It wasn't any of those things. He just happened to have a relatively long, at least for Baber's career, stint as an assistant at Baylor. And then he had two other jobs before he came to SU. So it wasn't like, just as he spent some time there, it doesn't mean he was going to go take that job. You could say the same thing about when the Arizona job opened last year. Like, obviously he didn't have the success yet, but like, if Arizona fires someone after next year, just as he spent some years at Arizona, doesn't mean he's going to go back there. So, I think when you look at these openings, especially like a Baylor, you have to look at the situation and say, like, is a, almost 60-year-old Dino Babers going to want to go take over that kind of a rebuild?
Right.
Which, when Rule got there after Briles got fired, basically a full year after Briles got fired, that thing was, like, gutted to the studs. And he's done a really nice job of getting them back to a bowl in 2 years. But if Rule was to leave, and there's a reason they gave him a giant 7-year contract right out of the gates, like it was not. They had to pull him out of Temple because it was a bad situation. He took it. He's done a nice job. If he was to leave for the Jets job, which obviously is not happening now because they hired Adam Gase instead, it kind of sounds like that he turned them down, which is somewhat surprising, but not really considering he does have that crazy job security. Like, that's going to be another pretty big rebuild, and I can't imagine Babers leaving unless it's for just, like, a knockout situation. Like, I mean, the jobs we've brought up, USC, if it opens up and they want Babers, more power to them. Auburn is so crazy in terms of the fan expectations there. I think you'd have to think long and hard about it, but if he was to go there, you understand. If something went weird with O'Brien Day at Ohio State in a couple of years, like, those are all situations that you get, but Baylor's not one of them. Like, Baylor's just not a much better job, especially with, like, Oklahoma is absolutely rolling right now. Texas looks like it's turned things around. Oklahoma State's going to get better. They had, like, a down year and still went to a bowl. Texas Tech, who knows what happens with Matt Wells there, but, like, they're on the same... I mean, they were actually decent this year for all the stuff about Kingsbury's hire at the Cardinals. Like, Texas Tech had a lot of bad luck this year. So it's just not a Houston. Just hired Holgerson, and will probably get better. So, like, it is not a super great job.
There's far too many things to leap over there. Like, I mean, Babers just proved this year that in 3 years he could get Syracuse to be the second best team in the conference. Like, that's not going to happen down in the Big 12 with Texas, Oklahoma, like what looks like a fully operational Iowa State, what looks like, again, an improved, Oklahoma State with a lot of, longevity in what's his face? Mike Gundy.
And gets, like, an ascension every year.
Yeah, exactly. Like all of these guys, like West Virginia is going to like bounce back probably with Neil Brown. Like there's so many, even Kansas with Les Miles, like there's no reason why any coach, not just Babers, would jump over to the Big 12 right now, unless you had like some sort of unique situation. And like, if Babers is going anywhere, it's probably USC, and it's not this offseason, because SC is right in his backyard, where he spent a lot of his time as a kid, like in Southern California. SC is one of those jobs that can pretty much poach whoever they want around college football. And like, I know it's weird and dumb we're even talking about this, but we only bring it up because it is a conversation amongst the fan base, and it's something that I wanted to at least knock down sort of briefly today. Was just that, like, we already knew that he wasn't going there, but just to be clear, there are only a very small list of jobs that he's going to. Baylor's not one of them. I think we spelled out a good amount of reasons why. So when if SC doesn't open up next offseason, and if no other big jobs open up, and you see some random job like Vandy or somewhere else, maybe Gary Patterson retires, I don't know. Like, hold your horses and let things play out, because chances are, like, unless one of those big jobs opens, there's not a huge chance. It's not to say it's a completely, it can't happen, but there's not a very big chance that Babers or any other coach of a similar stature is going to head down in that direction.
Yeah, it's I think we should like compile at some point in the offseason, like compile a list of like things to, jobs to worry about if they open.
Right.
Like full stop. Like these are the 25 schools where if they were to open, we would have to worry about Dino Babers leaving for them.
25 is a very large number.
Yeah, and that was just like a, mm-hmm. You know, shouting out.
Of course.
Yeah, and USC even, like, with their hiring, and we go over it all the time because we make fun of USC a lot, like, with their hiring practices generally there and the fact that Lynn Swann is a...
bad at this.
Questionable athletic director. Yeah, it's... there's no guarantee he would even get a call because he doesn't have, like, connections directly there, so... Yeah, let's all take a deep breath. He's not going to Baylor now. He probably wasn't going to Baylor anyway. But we can we also not do this? Like, can we not be the fan base that like loses its mind every time? Like, our last head coach that left went to the NFL, and like people lost their mind about that. It's shocking like that Matt Rhule honestly isn't going to the NFL. Like, that's the surprising one. Not that like Marone did. So. Like, we need to all step back and realize what Syracuse is and what Syracuse isn't, and also, like, it's on either end here. Like, we are not a place that is going to get poached by a middling Big 12 school after we just gave our coach what is supposed to be a very competitive contract, and we are also not the school that's so good that our you know, alumnus head coach is not allowed to go to the pros. So we need to find our center here as a fan base and come to... peace with the things that happen in college sports.
Speaking of the head coach that went to the NFL, I feel like the Majaction episode almost got him fired because after...
Do we have a date on that? Because it was definitely early in the year before...
After that episode, the Jags only won two more games.
Oh, God. What did we do? The last time we did this, we have weird things, especially like talking about USC... The Helton experiment a couple years ago.
We actually kept Dino Babers here because we turned USC around a few years ago.
Yes, we directly led to USC's Rose Bowl.
Because he would have been fired if they hadn't gone to that Rose Bowl.
Probably. I think they won out after that episode.
Yeah, they didn't lose another game the rest of the calendar year. We have that. We have the weird Tulane branding stuff. And then this, we created a nonsense word, and then Doug Marone wept, and so did the Jaguars. Oh, well, at least it gave the Good Place more material.
Yeah, and at least, the Good Place also kind of did it by having the episode where they're like, oh, the Jags are good now, which is around the same time.
It was.
Go watch the Good Place on NBC if you don't.
Yeah.
Everyone listen to this.
Please do. Or Hulu, where I will randomly watch episodes just because it's a great show.
It's like up there with like best shows on television, regardless of genre.
I would very much agree. Before we get to halftime, because I think right now got a few minutes, Dan, some quick thoughts about Monday's game between Clemson and Alabama. I know you were as surprised as everybody else was. I was stunned though by the way it happened, and that Clemson just physically dominated. They had more speed. They didn't beat Alabama the way Alabama gets beat, where it's a spread offense and Alabama, you know, just has a couple turnovers early or doesn't score early and then has to play catch up and play outside themselves. Like, Alabama looked out of their element. Nick Saban looked out of his element. I've rarely seen a drubbing like that of a truly great team.
It's so rare to see Alabama actually shook. I think the last time was maybe when Ezekiel Elliott broke that crazy run against them in that Ohio State semifinal game.
Yeah.
But it's like occasionally Alabama loses about a game a year.
But it's not like this.
It's almost always dramatic. It's always like some David strategy involved. This was Clemson just beating the hell out of them. The Solid Verb actually compiled like an incredible list of the 2008-2019 Alabama losses, and you can like remember each. They're so notable that you just say a word or two, and you remember the games. And the list is Tebow, Utah, Stephen Garcia, which is the funniest one, Les Eatsgrass, Cam Newton, 9-6, the crazy stupid LSU game, Johnny Football, the kick six, Trevor, Oklahoma quarterback Trevor Knight, Dr. Bo, Cardale Jones and Zeke, Swag Kelly, Deshaun Watson in the championship game, Jared Sidham in the Iron Bowl last year, and then Trevor Lawrence this year. Like, this is the only one where they definitively, I think, just got beaten up since maybe, like, I don't remember the Tebow game, and I don't really remember the Utah game too much. But, like, by far, the worst Alabama loss since 1998, the worst Saban loss since he was in the NFL, the first two store Alabama loss since Saban was at LSU and beat Alabama by two scores. So there's just so many notable numbers here, and it's really wild.
Yeah, I think thankfully, I think my favorite part of all this, as much as I was bummed to see Clemson win, I am very happy that the nobody believes in us narrative for Dabo could finally die.
He tried to keep it going.
He did try to keep it going.
Little old Clemson. Although, dude, I did appreciate the Cleveland Furl and Christian Wilkins cutting the Shug Knight promo after the game was wonderful.
That was great.
It was so good. It's funny because, like, Clemson really is, and people made note of it after, like, you think of Clemson being modeled after Alabama because Dabo is from Alabama, although he never worked for Saban. But Clemson, like, to their credit, and obviously we have our own issues with them, like, they do seem to kind of be the anti-Alabama in terms of, like, the players actually have fun. Right. I do think Dabo kind of, like, spins the yarn a little bit with all of his, like, religiosity and all, like, the, little old us stuff when he, you know, they have crazy facilities and invest in their football, like, nuts, and have made, like, this really concerted effort to become a football school. To their credit, I think they're the first school to, like, elevate themselves to blue blood status since...
Miami?
Probably Miami, yeah.
Well, Florida, I guess. Because I think Florida, as much as... I think Florida did it after. Yeah, like, Florida probably is the most recent.
I think Spurrier, they were flirting with it.
Right.
And I think Meyer... Okay, so Florida's probably the answer.
Yeah.
Because Oregon never got there, and they were close.
Oregon was the closest until here. I mean, Clemson was...
Clemson did it. They were a good program until a couple years ago. Until that Ohio State... The first Ohio State win, I think, is what started it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, and, like, not to tie it directly to basketball, but, like, for those that were pining for, you know, Villanova to be included in a blue blood conversation, for those even thinking that Gonzaga belonged near a blue blood conversation, like, no. This is how you become a blue blood. Is
I think Nova's getting there, but they
Nova's still getting there, but they're not there yet. Like,
the span needs to be a little longer because Nova could, like, this year Nova's going to fall off, and that's fine. But if Nova recovers and wins another title in, like, 3 or 4 years,
now they're there. But, like, at the same time, like, UConn's on blue blood, and UConn's won 4 titles. Like, I think, and, you know, I have this conversation all the time, and I get a lot of hate mail from former Big East foes of ours. But, like, Clemson actually did it where they built themselves up over a 5 to 7 year stretch into an absolute machine and never really took a step back. Like, that's the amazing part, I think, is just never, and again, this is not to praise Clemson too much, but never took a step back in there, really. Like, just progressively marched up the rankings, and, like, and the inflection point is that Orange Bowl loss.
The West Virginia loss.
Yeah.
It was like, for whatever happened after that, they stuck with
the plan. Well, they hired Venables.
Yes, that was, and after Oklahoma ran him out of town, which is hilarious.
Right.
And it's crazy because, like, when Dabo was hired, like, he was the wide receivers coach. I don't think anyone expected him to keep the job.
No.
They like, to their credit, and this is just, like, completely, you have to, like, put your biases aside. Like, Clemson decided right off the bat they were going to pay to make the staff great. Dabo had a vision, however, like, weird it was that he was the one to have it. He had clearly had, like, a you know, blueprint to getting this done, and they've just, like, they've dedicated themselves to becoming a great football school, which you could talk about, like, priorities being misaligned or whatever, and there's some fairness to that, but, like, I guarantee you Clemson University is rolling in applications.
Oh, 100%.
I wish I could pull up the numbers, because I know even after, like, what was it, after the Johnny Manziel year, A&M's donations were, like, up a crazy, crazy number. I bet you the Clemson, the year-over-year, if you compare this to, like, 2004, is insane. And it's largely because kids see that football program, and that is what so many schools say, like, the front door to the school. But, like, that's true. And if you want to make it, if you want to go become a college sports powerhouse, like, there is value in that.
SU now, did it too in 2003. There were tons of articles about it, how they had never had more applicants, and, like, they ended up, like, running out of space, like, for accepted students, because based on the regular percentages, like, everything went out of whack just because of the 03 championship.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge deal, and you can then parlay that into good things for the school at large. Then you get into like questions about cheating, which always get like accusations of thrown everywhere. I'm at the point where I just assume that whatever happens at one school is happening, aside from like some specific things, but like general cheating is probably happening across the board. So like that's not that big a worry. But like, yeah, Clemson decided they wanted to be a really great football school, and I'm sure there are other schools that have done similar things, and Clemson just found the combination of factors that it done, which is pretty wild considering where they were not that long ago. And even when you just go back to 11 and they lost by 40 points in an Orange Bowl.
Agreed. Good for them. And that's the last nice thing I'll say about Clemson for today. some halftime quick, and then we can talk hoops. So, Dan, what have you been drinking?
Pretty light week for me coming off of the new year, which I'm sure I'm not alone with. I know a lot of people do their dry Januaries, which is fine. I don't, but I think naturally your first couple weeks after New Year's and after Christmas, like if you're been drinking more heavily, I don't know what's going on with you. I've had I think two new things. One is I'm drinking a Captain's Daughter double IPA from Graysale up in Rhode Island, which I had never had before. Just a solid rat solid double IPA, pretty strong citra hop profile. I think they have Mosaic in here too. Really nice double IPA. And then the other day I had a New School IPA from Southern Tier. Hadn't had a New Southern Tier thing in a while because it doesn't always get down here, but it's on tap locally, and that's also solid. It's nothing crazy, but a couple of good IPAs.
Fair enough. I'm one of those people that drinks more in the beginning of the year because my birthday's in the first 2 weeks and the college football championship's in the first 2 weeks. There's just a lot of things that like involve drinking over the first 2 weeks of the year. So I usually like slow down after that period.
That's very fair. If my birthday was yours, which is tomorrow.
It is.
Yes, happy early birthday, but on time birthday for when people are listening.
31 years, very old. Anyway, so yeah, I got some of that drinking started over this past weekend. Had a Bottle Logic Fundamental Observation. It's a vanilla imperial stout. It is bourbon barrel aged. It's really, really good. I've had it before. They expanded distribution of it a little bit this year, so I got to pick one up over at Total Wine. I was glad to share that with my wife. And then yesterday, Tuesday, went over to Modern Times downtown LA tasting room for an extended lunch. The Dankness Dojo, as they've dubbed it. And I had a bunch of different things. Had a New England Pale Ale, the double dry hopped Wolfgang. It was really good. Had Star Cat. It was a Hell's Lager that they made with Highland Park, which is up in LA too. Had Aim True. It was their table beer that they made. Path of Perspective. It was New England IPA. Love Cleric was a Belgian Blonde. That was really delicious from them. And then had a Chromatic Illusion, which is a Baltic Porter that had a lot of like really nice chocolate notes. Yeah, if you're in LA at all, highly recommend going to the Dankness Dojo for Modern Times. A lot of great beers there. A lot of kind of tasting room only stuff. And you can get things to go too. So I'll have even more to share next weekend.
Very nice. Yeah, enjoy it.
I definitely will.
You only turn 31 once or whatever.
So I've heard. Anyway, as mentioned, we are in the middle of the Syracuse-Clemson game. SU's in another rock fight, but one that they're actually playing reasonably well in. Up 30-22 at the half. They're shooting 50% from the floor. Pretty shoddy from outside, just 31-14. Only taking 3 free throws. This is becoming a theme for us that we're just... Because our interior players can't shoot, we're just not even letting them shoot at this point. So we're not getting free throw opportunities. We're winning the rebound battle. We are tied in turnovers. We have the same amount of fouls. Clemson shooting terribly from the floor, 8 of 25. That's a 32% clip. 2 of 8 from outside. They're a bad three-point shooting team. So that is something that is going to help us. Also noting on the scoreboard right now, Rutgers is beating Ohio State. Ohio State, please come back in this game. I would really like our quality win to stay quality.
Yeah, can you not?
Can you not lose to Rutgers?
Ugh.
Anyway, so Dan, what are your thoughts on this first half since you were watching things a little bit closer?
A little bit. It's hard to pay full attention.
That's fine.
Yeah, we're not shooting great. We are basically shutting Clemson down. It's actually, looking at the shooting numbers, it really shouldn't be this close. We had a much larger, I think we had a 12-point lead at one point. We, like you said, we once again are just not getting to the free throw line. We are 1-for-3 from there, which are all reset. We do have a much more engaged Murat Dolezal, who had a beautiful assist to, I believe, Brissett on a nice dunk on a little backdoor situation in transition. He has 5 points. All of our starters have at least 5 points. So we're getting a pretty balanced load here, but we are playing at a very Clemson Syracuse pace, hence the 30-22 halftime score. We're playing a lot better, and we've just looked a lot better the last couple of games overall. But
this isn't basketball.
Yeah.
This isn't Virginia shit. I just don't want to watch anymore.
Yeah. It is always stark when you're shooting like 54% from the field, but 25% from three, and more than half of our shots have come from there. And like, obviously in modern basketball, you do have to take threes. You would hope that if you're not hitting, like, they're not half your shots when you're this Syracuse team.
Yeah, that's the thing. If we're actually driving the lane, I mean, if we had the ability to drive the lane, which we probably don't, we would probably be up by 12 to 15. Instead, we're only up 8. But, I mean, theoretically, if Clemson can't really make the necessary adjustments at halftime, if SU is just going to do what they were doing, I mean, nobody's really playing, like, super, super well. But, like, Dolezal has always been a fairly accurate shooter. He's 2-of-3, battles 3-for-7, actually, like, a little less accurate than he's been all year. Brissett's 3-for-6, uses 2-for-4. Like, Frank even getting in on the action a little bit. 5 points, 2 boards, 2 assists. So, like, again, I think we're seeing Frank continue to trend up. Hopefully that continues, because the sooner Frank can get somewhere, I'd say if we can get Frank to 75% of what he was last year, we're back to being, like, you know, a top 30 or so team in the country, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, and even so, like, little by little, we do look better. We obviously had the back-to-back blowouts to end the non-conference play. I thought we looked really good against Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
Overall, I know they're not at full power, but it's still Notre Dame. They're a tough, really well-coached team, and we did a really nice job at the Joy Center, which is a tough place to play. I assume their students aren't back, but still, those old Indianans get after it. Clemson and Syracuse, I think we probably should have seen this kind of game coming. I'm looking at KenPom. Syracuse, 289th in adjusted tempo. Clemson, a brisk 226th.
Yikes.
But they're a pretty well-balanced team. Like, they're 48th in offense, 39th in defense. So we just need to get the ball to the rim a bit more. We're doing good work outside of the three-point shot, which has just been a major issue. So, I feel pretty good about this game overall so far. But we've seen, and this team generally has played pretty well in the second half the last couple weeks, but as we've seen, like, things do fall apart. But Clemson has no answers right now in offense, which is good as long as they don't turn it around. But I think we've been pretty solid about putting the clamps on, especially in the stretch runs in these recent wins. So hopefully we keep that going and we can add another fourth straight win, 2-0 in the ACC. I think we start to really kind of round into better shape since we fell into, like, bubble land again kind of recently.
Yeah, I know most of the projections that have come out this week have us as one of the last four in. I saw us facing Texas. I saw us facing a longtime postseason rival, Kansas State.
In both sports.
In both sports, yes. I was joking with John Morse over at Bring on the Cats, and we are the longtime postseason rival, hated from back in the 90s when K-State was very good football, and we were as well.
What are we playing, like three bowls total in the last, like, 20 years?
Which is weird.
Kansas State's like that dude that, like, when you're home for Thanksgiving and you're out, like, the night before Thanksgiving and you see, like, the person you don't want to see from high school. that's Kansas State Athletics. Like, no one wants to be here.
Yeah.
Someone just go to a different bar.
Yeah, well, that's going to become West Virginia. I mean, we at least have the history with that.
That's already us for West Virginia.
True. Just the guy that, like, beat you up in high school, but then when you see each other at the bar, it just keeps beating you up.
We tried to be, like, nice, and they were like, ugh. And then we beat them up, yeah. And then their coach left. It all worked out for us. I mean, I was fine with it.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine with me. Something that, you know, most have probably noticed about Elijah Hughes at this point. He's a very good rebounder. He's already got 6 in this game. He had 10 in the last game. He's had a bunch of games this year where he's had 6 or more. I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And this would be number 7 on the year out of a total of 15, which is pretty good. I mean, we've had, you know, players playing small forward that can rebound well. But there haven't been a lot, I think, the rebound at this level, at least comparatively to the rest of the team. Dan, is there someone
else? Especially for a perimeter player.
Perimeter guy who's like 6'6". Like, is there someone else I'm missing who like played this sort of role, like especially since he's played almost exclusively at the 3?
I mean, Brissette, but like obviously he is more of an interior player,
right,
who's like trying to add it to his game, where Elijah's our best 3-point shooter, is clearly a perimeter player. And I think he's like, I mean, I don't want to be like crazy, I think you can make the case that he's eclipsed O'Shea as our second best player so far this year.
Definitely more consistent. Yeah,
and Hughes, like he hasn't had a bad game since the Cornell game. He's been at least 15 points every game since, and he's been at least 14 points in all but 2 of our games, our Eastern Washington game and our Cornell game. So even like the bad performances, Hughes generally showed up and like had a pretty big impact. So that's gonna be really key going forward, especially as we look to do more damage from the outside. Also, Buzz Williams' hair now. I have the Virginia Tech name on my TV. What is this?
I don't need to. I'm going to look it up, but I don't need to see that.
He looks like a slightly younger Thibodeau.
That's not a
compliment. His hair and glasses. Are we getting like full hipster Buzz Williams? I hope we are.
I mean,
he's just going to be on, like, less on the court, maybe? That'd be nice.
Well, now he just looks like a Guido.
he does look like the tertiary lawyer in like a bad Godfather ripoff.
No, he looks like
sitting at the bench but doesn't have any, or sitting behind the desk but doesn't have any actual lines.
He looks like one of the husbands on Real Housewives of New Jersey. Yeah, Buzz is like, is this how he's getting better recruits? Is like, you just look like one of the kids?
Oh god,
I didn't need to see Buzz with hair. I mean, I'm here for it now. Gotta admit, definitely here for it now.
It was so jarring to see it that I like interrupted myself mid sentence as I like looked up at the TV, because since I can't put the Hughes game on the TV,
right,
I have the Va Tech Georgia Tech game, like a good ACC fan, and yeah, it was like I wasn't expecting that. That's not what I expected to have join my life tonight.
Buzz really stepping it up. He's wearing
glasses.
He's wearing layers. Yeah, he's
with a second left in the game.
I am very impressed. Way to go, Buzz. You're doing a pretty good job.
Real Blacksburg chic.
I think that is a very, very accurate description.
Blacksburg looks like they're gonna pull this one out with a 3-point lead with 1.8 seconds left. I don't know what, there was just an inbound to the opposite free throw line. Huh. Looked like we might get a pointless Leitner shot considering they're down 3, but Georgia Tech, something happened there. Timeout, maybe? I don't have the volume on.
Dolezal seemed to have another really nice assist.
He's a really good passer, and I hope we continue, especially when we play those zone teams that always that pop up more and more. If he can hit that jumper from the free throw line, like, he is that classic dude that would always shred us from in there. He has that exact skill set. And he also, like, he's really added something to his ball handling a bit. Like, I don't trust him to, like, break someone down. But in the Notre Dame game, like, he took it off the dribble. And if you just did a step on someone, like, I like what he's kind of, like, slowly adding to his game. Oh, that's not good.
No, that's not good. For those watching at home, Marcus Sales was part of a drug bust where him and 14 others were arrested for trying to sell more than 500 grams of cocaine.
Oh.
You'll remember Marcus Sales as a great wide receiver for Syracuse.
Really good that 2012 year.
Experienced in snow.
Oh, God. He did have a huge game in Kansas State in that first Pinstripe Bowl. There was plenty of snow there. He dove in it.
Apparently not the first or last time.
And now he is the subject of a Pusha T song.
Yikes.
Oh, God. This is not good, Marcus.
No, this
and
is,
his brother.
This is bad. This is very, yeah, not to make light of this. This is pretty bad. Anyway, yeah, like we were saying about Marek Dolezal, though, the guy is going to piss a lot of people off, as we mentioned during the ACC tournament last year.
Oh, he's a 4-year player, and by next year, people are going to, if he becomes like a real like frontline player for us and like one of our 3 or 4 best players by next season, people are going to not like him at all. It's going to be wonderful.
Honestly, NBA scouts, like, I saw there was that note the other day that, like, NBA scouts are looking at him and just are begging him to just, like, eat more.
Yeah, he's so thin. And we know he likes pizza. Like, just find more of it. And I know he prefers, what kind of pizza did he say he liked over the offseason?
Yeah, I...
Whatever it was, we need to go find more of it. And hopefully he... I mean, if he puts on, like... I mean, it still need a lot because he's very, very thin. But if he can put on, like, 30 pounds and then knock down 35% of his threes, like, we're in business.
Yeah, I think, honestly, even if we can get Dolezal to somewhere around, like, 10 points a game, like, by next year, I'm pretty excited about it. This year, I'll take, like, 7 or 8.
Yeah, this year, like, he's playing better as of late. I think we're more engaged with him starting since we inserted him into the starting lineup, which I think is... pretty much coincided with this winning streak.
It has.
I don't remember if he was in the starting lineup for the Buffalo game. I don't think he was. I'm pretty sure we started him for Arkansas State. I could be wrong. So if I'm wrong, someone yell at me on Twitter.
Right after those articles about him playing center, doing better, and then Boeheim laughed at it.
Yeah, Boeheim laughed at it. And then
talked a ton of shit, and then did it anyway.
Which is such a Boeheim thing to do.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It couldn't really be worse. And then it was better.
Yeah, no, like I for whatever reason though, even with Chugu, like when we put him on the bench, I think the first game was Arkansas State, and that's the game that he had like 13 rebounds coming off the bench. So it's not like his role is getting diminished by not starting. I think the minutes are probably about the same, maybe a little bit more slanted towards Marek, but it does seem like our offense just gets engaged earlier versus trying to find itself midway through the first half, and then it kind of rolls along. Once you've started the game with him in this at center versus Chukwu, who is still kind of a black hole there, so it's that, which is an issue. So I do think that was a nice change because you kind of like roll with it, however you see fit. Yeah, I'm looking now. So it was the Buffalo game was the last game that we started Chukwu in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
Thank you, Jim, for taking the advice of the bloggers and after mocking them for the advice that you then took.
Yeah, this shouldn't surprise. Although Jim's actually between that and then the fact that he called Hughes our best offensive player in preseason, and then it's actually almost been true. Because like Jim's good for one,
still has it, but like yeah. He's been very good.
But it's like yeah, he's always good for like one bout of hyperbole in preseason, and like usually the stronger it is, the more it's wrong. like the time that he said like the in 16-17 that was like the best team, one of the best teams he's ever had, and then we'd miss the tournament.
Oh yeah, that wasn't great. That was what I was thinking of. Just... He and John Rothstein should do like a podcast every year where they just talk about the team. And it's weird because you wouldn't think of Jim as like a person too hyperbolized about his team, and he really doesn't during the year.
He just beats everybody to the punch.
Yeah, it's before the year, he's always super high on his team, and then, like, during the year, he's, like,
hates them.
Super, just super realistic, and to the point where he just, like, gives up and gives into, like, weird ideas that he doesn't think will work.
Yeah. Also, in weird ideas I didn't think would work, Rutgers is probably going to beat Ohio State.
Not great.
Not good, especially because, well, I mean, this was a Rutgers home game, and you know what they say about the Rec.
Tough place to play. Real bam back.
The toughest place to play, especially when you look at Rutgers' sterling record at home over the last 20 years. They've just really been unbeatable there. It's amazing they've yet to make the NCAA tournament in that stretch.
They've yet to make the NCAA tournament, I think, in my lifetime.
Yeah, I am looking this up now, just for the hell of it. Let's find out what Rutgers has done as a program.
Nope, they made it once. Nope. I was 91, so I was about 6 months old.
They have made it twice in my lifetime. 89, 91. Way to go, Rutgers.
They won the Big East, right? Well, no, they weren't in the Big East yet in 91 for basketball, no. I don't think.
What the hell? Were they still in the ECAC at that point when they won the conference? Is that like the stupid middle? Oh, they were in the A-10.
That's weird. I didn't realize they were ever in the A-10.
Yeah, they were in the A-10.
I knew they didn't join the Big East till afterwards. And they've had 1, 2, 3, 4, winning seasons since joining the Big East, which is no longer a conference that they are in. They've been in two others since.
Yeah, I... Does any Power 5 program have a longer drought missing the NCAA tournament?
Northwestern hadn't made it, obviously, until...
Oh, yeah. I know that.
There can't be that many more.
It's probably them. I feel like they've got to have the longest drought.
Yeah, like TCU made it recently, and I...
They've even made a Final Four more times than Boston College has.
Yeah, it's Rutgers, because TCU was second, and they made it last year.
Right.
And then I think Auburn was third, and they made it last year. DePaul is fourth, and now second, I'm assuming. Well,
power is a strong word for them.
And then Wazoo is after them.
Yeah. I would say power is a strong word on DePaul, but everybody else, I guess, is fair game.
Roasting the Big East, as we do.
I mean, Rutgers is going to be 8-6. That's firmly on a bubble.
You know what's weird, though? It's like they're 8-6, but they have two horrendous losses. Like, I think, like, precludes them from making the tournament losses, unless they just go nuts. They lost to Fordham, and they lost to someone else. Oh, no, they came back and beat Columbia, but barely. So I was wrong. They have one horrendous loss.
But now they have one good win.
Yep. And, no, they beat Miami, which is, they're not great, but it's a thing. It's something. Yeah, so, I don't know. Does beating Ohio State offset losing to Fordham?
Yes.
Okay.
Just like I think beating Ohio State on the road offsets us losing to Old Dominion.
And I will say, they did play Wisconsin tough at Wisconsin. They lost by 5. They played Seton Hall, who's very good, tough, at Seton Hall. We'll see. I don't think this will be a tournament team.
No, I don't either.
They have a lot of work to do.
Speaking of tournament teams, UVA down 2 to BC right now.
ACC, it's a buzzsaw.
That's the thing. Like, at some, this is what we saw at the end of the Big East. Like, at some point, it's too good. And, like there's got to be, like, a top and a bottom. There can't be just, like, I mean, it's happening in ACC football right now, where, like, everybody's just kind of mediocre, so, like, law of averages just said, like, one team is going to be a little bit better by, like, record, but not actually on the field.
Yeah, I think they're like, the Big East, the old Big East, not the old Big East, but the new old Big East, like,
had a Big East.
Yes. Had that, like, that pretty stark, like, tier system. And, like, some teams jumped up and went down, but, like, you knew there was going to be three teams that, like, you could pencil in for wins. The ACC really does not have that right now. Like, even BC has been very competitive over the last couple of years. I mean, Georgia Tech almost beat VaTech tonight, and they were. The ESPN timeline thing on the top still has that as a 10-point game with 15 minutes left. It's been over for, like, 5 minutes now. Hmm. Yeah, like, there are no – even the worst teams in the ACC, like – tend to fluctuate up and bubble up, and then, like, there are some cycles there. And right now, like, there are not, unless I'm missing someone, like, off the top of my head, there's no, like, horrendous team.
No, not at all.
Like, Wake Forest is not very good. Wake Forest is pretty bad. But, like, the other 0-2 teams are Miami and Notre Dame. Like, those are pretty regular tournament teams. And then, like, going up, like, there's no one else that's terrible. But Wake Forest is definitely, I think, the basement this year, and they're not, like, all-time bad. They're just bad.
Yeah, no, I think we've had some all-time bad teams. I don't think that's the case anymore. Which, hey, that's good for the conference. It makes our schedule tougher, better. So whatever. I think we're just about done here. Again, we're quote-unquote watching the Syracuse-Clemson game while we're doing this. SU leads by 9 on my count.
Clemson started in, so it's 6.
Oh.
They had a 3.
Well, SU better pick it up. Luckily, we didn't provide too ringing of an endorsement. So if they happen to lose, that's very unfortunate. and not something I'm really here for, but whatever.
And Frank missed a free throw. Yeah, we are struggling to get to the line, and we are struggling when we were there. Not great. And we're 3 for 15 from 3. Cool. If we rectify one of these things, I think we'll win this game pretty easily. But Clemson's not a team you want to let hang around. They're too good for that. So... Hopefully we pull this one out and we'll get to 11-4. We'll be 2-0 in the ACC before. Is our next game Duke?
Our next game is Georgia Tech.
We do have that Georgia Tech game.
Oh, yeah, the whoever we pissed off in the ACC office to
yes,
put
give us the 2-3.
Yeah, it's not a not great.
And then we get that again later in the month, because why not have two games in 3 days, one at home and one on the road? It's a very nice thing to do.
Two games in 3 days, and then like three games in 5 days.
Yep.
Well, yeah, we have this 6 days.
The 26th to the 5th, where we're just playing all over the place. We have three road games in that stretch.
In a row. This is stupid.
At least they're like not terribly far. Like, it's Viotech, BC, Pitt, so it could be worse in terms of travel, but kind of obnoxious. That's like one of the only real benefits of the weird like early season ACC games, is that it will break up hopefully some of these crazy stretches.
Fingers crossed.
I know not everyone's like sold on that as a concept. I don't hate it as much as some other people, but I do think that's a distinct like benefit that could come. Oh, we're back at 10. Okay, so hopefully, right. Hopefully this works. Hopefully this hasn't been a terrible listen and that we win and everyone's happy anyway.
Agreed. Dan, anything else before we go?
No. Thank you for having me again. Happy birthday once again.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully next week we will, I don't know when we'll record, but hopefully it's after a crazy upset of Duke.
Agreed. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever other platform you listen to us on, and go Orange.
Go Orange.
Huge savings on new and previously leased furnishings. That's right, huge savings. At Court Furniture Clearance Center, choose from our wide variety of new and previously leased furniture and decor for your home or office. You'll find sofas from $199.99 and more. Everything in our 9,000 square foot showroom is Court certified, guaranteed, and in stock, ready for delivery or to take home today. Visit our Chandelier Court Furniture Clearance Center at 13946 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Mention Radio 20 and get 20% off.
At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.